Diane Whitman on behalf of the petitioner, New Orleans Depot Services Incorporated. There are two issues presented in this appeal. The first, whether the petitioner's New Orleans Depot Services Chef Yard qualifies as a maritime situs for purposes of the Longshore and Harbor Workers' Compensation Act. The second is whether the claimant, an employee of the petitioner, meets the requirements for maritime status under the Act. Both maritime situs and status must be established before New Orleans Depot can be held responsible for the longshore benefits to the claimant. With regard to maritime situs, this court must determine whether Section 903's extension of maritime situs to another adjoining area customarily used for loading, unloading, repairing, dismantling, or building a vessel extends so far as to include an area where it is undisputed that no loading, no unloading, no repairing, dismantling, or building of a vessel ever took place, and where it's undisputed that the area in question did not play any part, even remotely, to any overall area customarily used by an employer in those activities. The answer to the question is obviously no, but nevertheless, the Benefit Review Board did extend coverage that far. The board's determination is contrary to the plain and unequivocal language of the statute.
What's our standard of review on the two prongs that you set out?
Your Honor, I know there is a discussion in the Hudson case that perhaps the situs determination may be a factual determination. In this case, the facts are not in dispute. Therefore, it can only be a question of law. What Judge Wiener said in the Hudson decision, he was referring to a portion of the decision after Winchester went through applying and defining the proper scope. Once this court has defined the proper scope, you can then look to the factual determination and give deference to the factual determination. To the extent that I'm wrong and Judge Wiener was correct, it was overruled by the Supreme Court in Chandra's versus Latskis, where the court said any interpretation of a statute is a question of law.
So the answer to my question
is a question of law to both.
Okay.
With regard to maritime status, this court has to determine whether maritime employment under Section 902(3) encompasses an employee who does not participate in any way with the loading, unloading, repairing, or dismantling, building of a vessel, is not responsible for any part of the accomplishment of those activities, and who plays no role whatsoever in the movement of cargo between sea and land transportation. The determination that the Benefit Review Board and the ALJ made is a contravention of the Act and the well-established precedent of this court and the United States Supreme Court.
And again, Ms. Whitman, it seems to me that you're right on the verge of both, on the fringe of the situs and the status situation, what needs to be proved, what needs to be established. Based on our jurisprudence, how do you distinguish the Hollinghorst case, the one that had to do with the scaffolding?
Again, it goes to what is integral to the work that's being performed. The claimant in Hollinghorst was actually working on a pier where the longshoremen actually did their loading and unloading. It was part of an overall process. Here,
but he was just a carpenter.
But he was doing the work that a longshoreman may do in repairing his own work to do his own work. That pier was necessary. It was integral and necessary for the longshoremen to accomplish their loading and unloading activities. Nothing New Orleans Depot Services did would interfere with, facilitate, or have any impact on loading and unloading.
Well, what they were repairing was going to be loaded.
Well, it was going to be loaded onto trucks. It was going to be loaded onto rail cars.
Or maybe ships.
Okay, but Your Honor, The loading and unloading have already taken place. This court, the Supreme Court, has noted that once the unloading or loading operations cease, and it moves from sea transportation to land transportation, the stream of commerce and land, it's no longer covered by the Act.
But were the repaired containers going to be, had they already been designated for transport on rail or trucks?
The testimony.
Did you know where they were going to go after they left your facility?
The owner of New Orleans Depot Services candidly admitted that he had no information as to where they were going.
And do you have any cases that support that lack of knowledge would distinguish the status element?
It simply doesn't matter. Because at the point in time New Orleans Depot got those containers, they were empty. The cargo had already been discharged. It can't be, the work they're doing can't be integral to it. There was nothing in them.
Well, if you had a component of the ship to repair and it was going to be replaced on the ship, there's no difference there just because it's no longer on the ship, is there?
Well, look at it by analogy. My dad had a tool repair business. He repaired chains, he repaired engines to cranes, he repaired all that. Well, the crane is used in unloading the cargo, but are you going to consider a repair person who just works on a chain to be a longshore, to be covered under the Longshore Act? It's too attenuated.
Well, they've expanded it so severely, particularly in this case, I think, that you thought it might have been covered.
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
I think it's been expanded to such an extent, both the situs and the status, that your father may run the risk of being considered covered by the Longshore Act. How do we bring it back in, particularly with your facts, which are marginal in both factors?
Your Honor, frankly, I'm surprised. I thought this case was a summary decision. I think it's that clear. I can't believe that I'm arguing this issue before this court. There has to be a connection with loading and unloading. Otherwise, you've got the statute.
But you don't acknowledge the point Judge Clement was just asking you, that the coverage over time has been extended or expanded?
Absolutely, it has. And this court, as well as the Ninth Circuit, have probably taken it as far as it can be taken. But not one decision out of this court or any other court anywhere has ever found maritime situs where there is no loading, unloading, and I'm going to limit it to loading and unloading, pardon me, because that's what we're talking about here, actually took place, or whether it was integral to the employers or some employers' loading and unloading activities. New Orleans Marine Contractors argued in their brief that position that New Orleans Depot was taken was reversing the outer limits. This court certainly has noted the outer limits, but the outer limits have never been interpreted to take out the requirement of loading, unloading, or building shipbuilding activities.
Well, how do you avoid the prior Fifth Circuit jurisprudence that says the purpose of the work is the key. Non-maritime skills apply to a maritime project or maritime for purposes of the maritime employment test. So the non-maritime skills of repairing the containers apply to containers which have a maritime purpose. How do you distinguish your situation? I mean, I wish you would, because I think it's way out of line, but I don't know how to fix it.
I think what Your Honor is referring to is status, first of all, not to situs. Status refers to the occupational test. And even if you.
Well, that's a problem, too, because you were talking about the workers' employment. The work of the company versus the work of the individual. That's what you just mentioned.
But the
to Judge
situs,
Stewart.
But the situs, where the work takes place, has to be integral to something else. Look at, for instance, in Hudson. In Thibodeau versus Grasso Production, a platform like the platform in Hudson was found not to be a maritime situs. And what Judge Wiener noted in Hudson, it was not a maritime situs in Thibodeau because because it was not used for loading and unloading. Hudson, on the other hand, the platform was a consolidation point for the transfer of the oil that was going to the adjacent sunken barge to be loaded onto other vessels to be moved. So it was part of a whole. The whole facility, because the platform there was part of the whole process, that's why Situs was there. Just the fact that it's a platform sitting out there is not going to be maritime Situs. Similarly, in Winchester, the gear room was part of the employer's overall business enterprise, which was loading and unloading ships.
Well, in this case, Council, do you agree that New Orleans Depot Services served the container needs of Evergreen? Do you agree with that?
That served the container
needs of Evergreen?
Yeah, they fixed containers.
And Evergreen specialized in?
Evergreen, Judge.
Well, let me ask you this way. Did Evergreen specialize in the transportation of ocean-going cargo in a fully containerized atmosphere? Is that what they specialized in?
Yes. And let me just take it where it needs to go. Evergreen owned ships that carried containers. Evergreen, to the extent its employees are classified, are Jones Act seamen. They are not involved in the loading and unloading of cargo. This court said that but for the direct tie to Evergreen.
So your position is the only way he could have status is if he was involved in loading and unloading? That's it? Is that what you're saying?
It has to be, or an integral, or the work he was doing
that's
is
just
integral.
A yes or no. Is that a yes, that's what I'm saying, or no, it's not?
Yes, but you have to consider what that means. It doesn't mean he has to be actually doing the loading and the unloading. It means that the repair work that he is doing, and what Schwab said, the Supreme Court said, was the determinant factor is whether the repair work he is doing will cause operations to cease, loading and unloading operations to cease. Yes, repairmen are covered and can have maritime status, but only when their work could cause the loading and unloading to cease. That is not present here. Remember, when New Orleans Depot...
And it's not present because what? Why isn't that present?
When New Orleans Depot got those containers, the unloading process was finished.
Zepeda worked predominantly on Evergreen containers. You agree with that?
I'm sorry?
Zepeda worked predominantly on Evergreen containers.
Right.
How'd those containers get to the yard?
By a truck and in an empty condition. And this court held that even, I can't remember the name of the case, but there's a case where it talked about truck driver was trying to, who actually was at the port picking up a container, a loaded container. He was trying to say he was covered by the Longshore and Harbor Workers' Compensation Act. I said, no. You were at the point, once that loaded container was on your truck, you are in the land-based stream of commerce. You are no longer involved in the loading and unloading. It is done. Remember, they're trying to keep workers who at some part of their day will walk in and out of coverage. Because with containers, some of the stevedores may actually be on the vessel, some may be off of the vessel. They have to move cargo within. So anything that takes place between the point where the cargo is in sea transportation until the point that the cargo leaves the port, it's covered. But once that container leaves the port, it's on the land-based side of commerce. It is no longer covered.
Are the containers you repair ever returned to the ship rather than shipped off on rail or trains or
New Orleans
trucks?
Depot has no way of knowing that, Judge. One of the things ALJ noted was these were marine containers. There's no difference between a marine container and one that goes on a truck or on a rail car. There is no difference.
Well, you said, your big distinguishing point is that once it leaves the transportation loading, unloading area of the ship and goes, 300 yards to your facility or whatever, that it's no longer has anything to do with maritime activity or loading or unloading. Well, maybe it's being repaired and then it goes back to the ship. I don't know. I'm asking you.
It may. I don't think that's a relevant fact. The key is whether it's part of an ongoing. I mean, the courts have made it absolutely clear that there is a cutoff point, and that cutoff point is when loading and unloading stops. You cannot carry it to so far an extreme that you're completely out of the act. You're just gutting the act.
All right, Ms. Whitman, we have your opening argument. You've reserved some time for rebuttal. We'll hear now from Mr. Quackenbos.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah. Quackenbos, yes. Quackenbos. Very close. May it please the court, my name is Quackenbos. I represent New Orleans Marine Contractors and Signal Mutual Indemnity Association in this matter. I just want to begin by addressing a certain point made by Ms. Whitman that she's arguing that essentially the operations are only covered if it's part of a single business enterprise. But I think in Winchester, for example, where the gear room in question was located 5 blocks away from the docks, it's in that situation, if are we to say that if that was a contractor as opposed to a direct member of the business performing the exact same functions, that now the employee would not be covered. And I don't think that would be a tenable result. And also, she also mentioned empty containers. And at times, empty containers are shipped on the vessels to balance out the vessel or to satisfy certain terms of a share space agreement. And also that it disregards the inbound containers that are heading to the vessel for loading. Her argument only really addresses the unloading aspect of it. But in any event,
Are the containers that are in loading, do they stop at the facility to be repaired, and then are they loaded from the facility empty, or do they go to the facility next to the ship to be loaded to be put on the ship? Do you know that?
I do not know specifically, because in this situation, Evergreen was using several contractors to perform their work. And I think that...
To perform the loading and the unloading or the
correct,
repair
of its
work?
Containers. Because their vessels were coming, I mean, their containers, rather, were coming in on Like's vessels in this situation. Yet they still made the decisions determining where those containers were worked. And they set up contractors such as Nazi, in this case, to perform those repair operations to continue the overall process of their loading and unloading and shipping operations.
Well, if it's continuous, then they're not going to ship the containers off on trucks or rail cars, and nobody seems to answer that.
Well, I think
you're alleging that it's part of the loading unloading process. If it's damaged, it has to go to this repair shop, and then you seem to be implying maybe they'll put an empty one back on the ship for ballast or...
Oh, well, not necessarily. It may the loading could occur of the actual cargo into the container back at the point of loading onto the vessel.
Okay. Does that happen?
It certainly could happen. I don't know if it's necessarily happening. But in any event, that's mainly due to the fact that Nazi employees, four of whom were testified in this case, could not provide any testimony regarding where these containers came from or went to following their work.
Well, if they came from a ship, from a like ship, and they went to the repair shop 300 yards away, and then they were put on a rail car and shipped off to Kentucky, do you still say that the repair work is covered under the Longshore Act?
I do. I think the 11th Circuit case of the Atlantic Container versus Coleman is a great, draws a great line in that case as to when this process ends. And that is when the container repairs are done to make these containers roadworthy, I guess, mm-hmm. to then get them out doing whatever kind of land-based activity they may be doing. When they're completed for outbound containers, that would be a point in time when you could say okay, the loading, or rather the unloading process has been complete, because that damage occurred during the shipping operation.
But is the repair part of the unloading operation?
Well, I think it's more significant on the way back in, because now you're preparing these containers.
But that's not what we have here. These containers, I thought, came from the ship to the repair facility.
Well, they
it's not the train bringing the containers to the repair facility and then taking them to the ship, is it?
Well, yes, that is part of it. And I think that also we're looking at containers on the way out as well. I mean, this is a...
So when are they covered? When they leave the repair facility or right before they get to the facility? Or I just don't understand your position that they're covered while they're being repaired if you don't have any idea or any purpose for the use of the repaired container after it leaves the facility.
After it leaves which facility?
The repair facility.
Well, you do have a purpose for the containers, because in order for these containers...
But you don't know what it is. You don't know if it goes back to the ship to be loaded or if it goes off to Kentucky on a train.
Correct.
So where does it? So where's the cutoff? Is it inside the repair facility? Does it retain a maritime nature while it's being repaired? That seems to be your position.
Yes, insofar as it was related to maritime activity in the first instance. If this was a container.
If it came from the ship.
Correct.
And you say some of them also come from the train.
Correct. And that's why it's important that I think we look at the fact that it's not required that that the containers are constant, or rather that the work is entirely maritime employment. That is not what's required. But at least part of the employment is required to be maritime employment. The Hudson decision that was alluded to earlier.
The part where the employee is injured.
Correct. And in this case, we're talking about a hearing loss matter, so that I think there's a lot of overlap as to where that all is taking place. But in the Hudson case, you're looking at only 9.7%, I believe, of the employment in question was maritime employment. In this case, I think the facts suggest that at least that, and likely a lot more, consume the employment of Mr. Zepeda when he was working for NAZI. And I think it's also important that one of the purposes of the act is to avoid individuals walking in and out of coverage. Mr. Zepeda was performing the exact same employment duties and responsibilities when he was working for New Orleans Marine Contractors as he was when he began working for New Orleans Depot Services. The only thing that changed is essentially he went down the street. And so for them to not be covered, in one situation when he's doing the exact same thing, in another situation, and one is indisputably a maritime employer for purposes of the Longshore Act, would be a travesty. I don't think that would...
Well, I'll ask you the same question I asked counsel opposite. What's our standard of review?
The standard of review is clear. It's set forth in the Winchester case, the en banc decision of this court from 1980, and then acknowledged recently in the Hudson case that it is situs and status determinations are determinations of fact. And so I think we have to give some deference to the ALJ in this case, who is in the best position to evaluate the evidence and the testimony submitted, including the live testimony that happened at the hearing of this matter. And I believe he arrived at the correct conclusions. Now, insofar as his status is concerned, I think a key quote from the United States Supreme Court in Chesapeake and Ohio versus Schwab is certainly applicable here, and that is that employees injured while maintaining and repairing equipment essential to the loading or unloading process are covered by the Act. And there couldn't be another piece of equipment more essential than a marine container to the loading and unloading in the modern-day shipping industry. So I think in this case, and that's especially so because these containers are now what has become the hold of a vessel. I mean, employees who used to work in the vessel themselves to repair the hold to do these shipping needs, that work is now being done by container repair mechanics, such as Mr. Zepeda, on shore. And so I think in this case that if the BRB essentially found that the administrative law judge's decision was supported by the evidence,
Well, I don't see how Schwab is controlling here, because that was a conveyor belt system that went straight to the ship, where these containers are taken off the ship and sent who knows where. So I'm not convinced that's totally controlling.
Well, it's not necessarily controlling, but I think it's...
I thought that's what you said.
I'm sorry. What I was saying is that it's illustrative of the point that if you're maintaining and repairing equipment that is essential to the loading and unloading process, Evergreen couldn't load or unload anything without their containers being in a state of being acceptable for use. And so that's essentially the point, that if you're a mechanic doing repair services on a container, that's an essential part of the loading and unloading process, then you are covered by the Act.
All right, sir.
Okay. And I have just a little bit of time left, and I'll just say that, again, the Benefits Review Board did conclude that the ALJ's decision was supported by substantial evidence, and that it was rational and it was supported by law, and we feel the court should do the same.
All right. Thank you, sir. We have your argument. All right. We'll hear from the director, Mr. Boyle.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I think one thing that may have been lost in all of this is that this case is controlled by the court's en banc decision in Winchester, and which dealt with status and situs in a situation very similar to this. In both cases, with regard to status, we have a worker who repairs equipment that is used in the loading process. In Winchester, it was cable slings and forklifts and pallets. In this case, it is shipping containers. What the court found in Winchester is that a worker's repair of loading equipment made him a maritime employee, and therefore he had status under the Act. Here, the ALJ and the board found the same thing with regard to Mr. Zepeda, that his repair of equipment that is used in the loading process makes him a maritime employee, and therefore he has status under the Act. With regard to situs, in both cases, the worker's injury occurred at a site where the repair work took place, where no loading or unloading could possibly have taken place because both of these were removed from the water. They were not contiguous with the water. In Winchester, of course, it was the gear room that was 5 blocks away from the gates to the nearest docks. And here it is a container yard that is actually closer. It's only 300 yards from the actual navigable waters of the Industrial Canal. In Winchester, the court found that the gear room itself was in the vicinity of navigable waters and that the work that went on there provided a functional nexus to the waterfront that was sufficient to make it a maritime situs. Similarly here, the ALJ and the board found that the container yard was in the vicinity of navigable waters and that the work that went on at the container yard provided a functional nexus to the waterfront. Now, despite these parallels between this case and Winchester, NAAQSI is arguing against both status and situs. And their status argument, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that because neither Mr. Zepeda nor any other employee of NAAQSI played any part in the movement of cargo directly to and from ships, Mr. Zepeda can't be a maritime employee. But in making that argument, they completely ignore the Carroll decision that Judge Clement was talking about. In that case, Mr. Carroll was a carpenter. He was building scaffolding for a company that did nothing but build scaffolding. The court specifically recognized at the beginning of the opinion that none of Hulling Horse's employees played any part in the movement of cargo to or from ships. They nonetheless found that Mr. Carroll had status. And the reason they did is because he was building scaffolding, which was going to be used for other employees from another company to stand on, not even while they loaded cargo, mind you, but while they repaired a piece of equipment that would be used in the loading process. So what the court recognized and what the Supreme Court has also recognized is that maritime employment is much greater than just loading or unloading a ship, or even taking the segmented pieces of loading or unloading the ship. And most pertinent to this case, both the Supreme Court and this court have held that the repair of equipment that is necessary to the loading of ships is maritime employment. I believe containers without which container ships literally cannot be loaded meet that requirement. So that leaves us with situs. What the court said in Winchester is that there has to be both a geographical and a functional nexus to the waterfront in order for a location to be considered a maritime situs. Now, NAAQSI concedes that the Chef Yard has geographic nexus because it was only 300 yards from the water, but it argues that it doesn't have functional nexus, and the reason it doesn't have functional nexus is because no actual loading or unloading of ships took place there. That's their first situs argument. I'll get to their second one in a moment. But this court specifically rejected that narrow interpretation in the Winchester case. The court specifically recognized that no loading or unloading of ships could possibly have taken place at the gear room in Winchester. It nonetheless found that it was a maritime situs because it had a functional nexus through the repair of loading equipment that went on there. So in light of Winchester, that argument has to fail. Now, Nazi's second argument, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that I think they want to add an additional requirement. They want to say that it's not good enough that Mr. Zepeda was repairing equipment that was used in the loading of ships. It had to be Nazi's loading of ships. In other words, I think what they're saying is we, Nazi, did not actually load any ships. We don't have an ongoing ship loading operation. If we don't actually load ships, we can't be a maritime employer. And if we're not a maritime employer, you, Mr. Zepeda, can't be a maritime employee. Well, that turns the inquiry on its head, because what the court recognized in the Carroll case is that the definition of a maritime employer is completely derivative of the situs and status requirements. In other words, what they said is a maritime employer is one who has maritime employees working on a maritime situs. And if your employee is in maritime employment on a maritime situs, you are by definition a maritime employer, even if, as in Carroll, you are a scaffolding contractor, which I think we can agree has much less to do with the loading and unloading of ships than the repair of shipping containers.
True, which is why I don't see how they qualify. You're talking about the Winchester controlling. That was a part of an ongoing loading, offloading process. But we don't have that here. Once they take the container either from the ship or from the train to the repair shop, it doesn't matter that the repair shop is anywhere. I mean, it could be miles away. It's still doing the same work. And the work that it's doing is not controlled by an ongoing loading process with respect to the maritime industry, because that container may never go back to a ship.
It may not go back to a ship, Your Honor. We don't know. And the reason we don't know is because Nazi's managers couldn't tell us where these containers were going. As a result, the ALJ had to rely on the testimony of Mr. Oberkite, who was the vice president of Evergreen at the time. And what Mr. Evergreen said is that we used these contractors, like Nazi, to repair both maritime containers, those were coming off ships or going to ships, and those were coming off trucks and going to trucks. And he said we did not distinguish between the containers when we sent them to them, except that we made sure that the folks who were repairing the containers that were going to and from ships were using ILA-certified labor, the union-certified labor. And we know from all of the testimony from everyone that Nazi had to use ILA-certified labor in order to fix these containers. What that means is that some of these containers, at the very least, were either coming off the ships or going back to the ships at the repair facility.
Well, the carpenter building the scaffolding is right on the wharf next to the ship, correct?
Correct. And that goes to geographical nexus, Your Honor, not functional nexus, because I think the functional nexus here is much closer, because what is being repaired here is something that literally is required for these ships to carry cargo. We were two or three steps removed from that in the Carroll case, because the scaffolding that was being built was not even going to be used as a loading platform.
Well, it was going to be used to help with the loading with the equipment, either the cranes or...
Correct, Your Honor. It was going to be used for another employer's enterprise, loading enterprise, not hauling berths.
Right.
And it wasn't even going to be used for those employees to load cargo from. It was going to be used for them to stand on while they fixed a piece of equipment that would later be used in the loading
process.
That
was part of the ongoing loading, offloading process. All right. I just think this whole thing's out of control, but perhaps you're right.
Your argument, Carroll, is... I mean, if you took that argument, Carroll would really be a further stretch out than the facts in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, if we had the opposite, where this was Carroll and Carroll was being argued, we'd say the scaffolding and all that is pretty far removed.
Correct.
But if that's the parameter in Carroll, where it's not even the direct employer, but two employers removed, so to speak, notwithstanding that geographically it may be close, but on the functional test, that's more on the periphery then?
Correct, Your Honor. And I think what it comes down to is that what is required for situs is a functional nexus to the waterfront. And the repair of the loading equipment provides that functional nexus to the waterfront. What's not required is a functional nexus to an employer that actually does the loading. And that there's nothing in the statute about that. It doesn't mention employer at all in 3A. And there's nothing in any of the cases about that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have your argument. All right, Ms. Whitman, you have rebuttal.
Your Honor, the respondents have confused so many issues in this case. I'm going to start going backwards. Hollinghorst versus Carroll was not a situs case. It was a status case. The functional nexus only relates to situs, not to status. So the fact that it's far removed is irrelevant. It was a status consideration. It was not situs. There was no dispute of situs in Hollinghorst versus Carroll. Testimony of Mr. Oberkreit. Mr. Boyle said that New Orleans Depot didn't show because they couldn't say where these containers came from. Number one, it doesn't matter when we're talking about situs and status where they came from. What matters is whether it was part of an ongoing operation. But second of all, New Orleans Marine Contractors had the burden of establishing a subsequent maritime employer. Claimant in this case established longshore benefits, was that he was entitled to longshore benefits against New Orleans Marine Contractors. So they're entitled to, the claimant's entitled to collect those longshore benefits. New Orleans Marine Contractors says, oh, but I'm not the last maritime employer. It was New Orleans Depot Services. So it was their burden. It wasn't New Orleans Depot's burden to extricate itself as being a maritime employer, but it was not. Mr. Oberkite's testimony, and I took it through in the reply memo, and it's a little bit convoluted, but when you take that testimony and you boil it down, none of the containers that were ever on a ship in the New Orleans port ever reached New Orleans Depot Services. Mr. Oberkite said that if the container would have, if Evergreen directed where that container was going to go, which it usually didn't because Likes was the one carrying it and they would use their own contractor, New Orleans Marine Contractor, to do it. But if Evergreen directed the movement of that container to a contractor other than the one in the port, it would have been loaded. The testimony is unequivocal. The claimant, all of the employees...
It would have been loaded when you received it?
Yes. If it had been directed from Evergreen to go to one of its contractors, it would have been loaded.
Well, the ALJ and the BRB had all the facts that you're arguing to us, although you did respond to my question that it was questions of law, although you are in facts to me now, but the same arguments, you know, were made against the same body of law. I mean, I get your point in terms of this, but still sounds to me. What did they miss?
I wish I could understand what they missed, but let me tell you how absurd the ALJ's determination was. The ALJ said that if he restricted the movement, if he restricted NOD from being a maritime situs, talking about this walking in and out of coverage, if they switched employers. Well, Your Honor, if you switch employers, what difference does it make? He said the same work was done. What was the difference? The ALJ wrote it in his opinion but failed to recognize the import. What he said was, the primary difference between New Orleans Marine Contractors and New Orleans Depot is that New Orleans Marine Contractors also perform stevedoring operations. The claimant performed vital services to New Orleans Marine Contractors stevedoring operations through the repairs of the marine containers. That's not here.
So they loaded and unloaded the prior employer?
That's correct. They were stevedores. So it was integral. Integral means necessary and essential to the completeness. That's not here. New Orleans Marine Contractors did nothing integral to the loading and unloading. A situs is only a maritime situs if, and this is what Winchester said, if it was actually involved, if that situs, there was actual involvement of loading, unloading, repairing, dismantling, or building a vessel. That is not here. How can this be an adjoining area when it has no connection to any other area that does loading or unloading?
Is the repairing in that statute, the portion you just read, does that relate to the container which would come on or off of them?
No, Your Honor. It's repairing of a vessel, not of a piece of equipment used in the process. If this repair
was... What if it was repairing a crane, land-based?
Well, it depends if the crane is being used by a stevedore. New Orleans Depot Service is not a stevedore. It does nothing.
All right, Ms. Whitman, on that point, I think we have your point. We appreciate your passion and the merits of your argument. And thank counsel for both sides.